Hi, everybody. This is Casey. This episode is a part of our Anomaly Supplemental Catch-Up Initiative. It is our League of Their Own episode. There will be clips which are used solely for the purpose of commentary. There are some, you know, kind of fun mistakes that I found that I just decided to leave in because they're funny. And also some things we didn't talk about because we don't live in the future. It was revealed in early 2015, like February or March, that there would be a League of Their Own musical coming soon to Broadway. And it's being written by Jason Robert Brown, who has also written music and lyrics for The Last 5 Years, which was a movie that recently starred Anna Kendrick. There's a beautiful musical he worked on called Parade, and he also worked on an adaptation of Bridges of Madison County. He just seems like the most appropriate composer for the job, so we'll see what happens, but I think that it's a pretty good set of skills there. And also, since this was recorded in September 2014, sorry guys, there will be some things that have been repeated, things that may have been mentioned in the We're Not Dead episode, but I'm just gonna leave them in there for the sake of, you know, posterity. Like, it's its own little time capsule. Our own little podcast time capsule that'll live in the feed forever. These are really easier with Sue. I miss Sue. Alright, enjoy the episode.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, my name's Sue, and that's more than a name, that's an attitude. And I am an anomaly.
My name is Casey, and there's no crying! There's no crying in baseball!
And I am an anomaly.
Welcome back to Anomaly Supplemental.
Hi, you guys! How was your Jurassic Park podcast? I'm sure it was great. Did you miss me? Yes, you did.
Yes, we did.
Yes, you did.
So while it may not be science fiction or fantasy, we have decided to talk about A League of Their Own this month.
Well, I think it's kind of geeky, at least on your part, because you are a big nerd about baseball.
Yes, I am actually a real-life baseball fan. And see, when we discussed this, I thought it would make sense, because, like, the regular season's winding down and the playoffs are about to start, baseball movie, yay! But, you know, I did not take into consideration that the captain of my team is retiring and played his last home game last night. So I'm kind of an emotional disaster about baseball in general right now.
And I don't care.
No, you don't care.
I don't. I don't understand sports ball.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's why we're anomalies.
Yay! Free to be you and me. So, since I've been gone for a while, what have you been up to?
Oh, I have to go first? Okay.
Yes, I'm putting you on the spot. You know what I've been up to.
I went to the Dragon Con.
How was that?
It was crazy.
Yeah?
So busy. So busy. I got to sit on a panel with Veronica Belmont, which was pretty cool.
She is pretty in real life as she's on the internet.
She's very cool. I unexpectedly... not unexpectedly, but inadvertently, like, did a weird thing where she, like, introduced herself to me when I sat down next to her, and I was like, oh, I know who you are. And I was like, wait a minute, that was weird. It was a Doctor Who panel, too, so there's that.
Oh, I love it.
What else did I do? I was on a bunch of panels. I marched in the parade. I got to talk to Gates McFadden about working with Jim Henson. I got to see Patrick Stewart and Gates do a panel together. And I participated with my friend Kim in Project Cosplay, where we literally had like 25 minutes with a break to make a costume out of random materials they brought us, and we won. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
It was a good con. It was an exhausting con. And I still, it's been almost a month now, and I still feel like I haven't recovered.
That's basically a marathon for you, isn't it? Because you're doing God knows how many panels. You're doing the parades and...
Yeah, I'm not really a partier like a lot of people are at Dragon Con, so they'll stay out super late. Mm-hmm. I usually get a decent amount of sleep. But it's nonstop all day long with, you know... I think the number on Saturday was over 65,000 people at Dragon Con.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It's like in less than a square mile of downtown Atlanta.
Wow. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
Well, I moved.
Yeah, moving or
to a completely
really.
To a completely different city. Our apartment is nice.
That's
which
good.
Is good. Yeah. And we're still brand new to the city, so we're not quite acquainted with the social happenings and the whatnots, but yeah, it's been good so far. Just me and the dog chilling out and staring at the boxes in our apartment going, should we really unpack this? I know we're going to be here for the next couple of years, but, you know, we're going to need to move again eventually.
That vaguely sounds like you're saying that your husband is not there.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. They're still together.
Yes. My husband has been going to law school. So he's here in my heart, but he's at the law library studying. Like he should be.
Good.
But no, it's just been, for the most part, it's just been me unpacking. And it just got to a point where I... decided to take a break, and it's been a few weeks since then.
Ah, yes. That can happen.
So, typical moving things.
Yeah.
Typical moving things. Also, I recently got into the TV show New Girl. Have not been reading much, but I have been binge-watching New Girl on Netflix like nobody's business. I really like Zooey Deschanel, and I really like the guy who plays Nick.
Yeah.
Jake Johnson. And in terms of books, the only book I have read in the past 2 months has been Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. It's really good. And she's the COO of Facebook, so it's interesting to get her perspective on working in a high-profile tech business like not just Facebook, but also she's worked in Google and those things. And she talks about how women can approach business, and it just offers some options and also goes over some of her personal experience and sociological stats. So
I'm still trying to catch up with my Goodreads goal. I am still behind, but I'm doing better. And I have recently finished The Handmaid's Tale and a bunch of Star Trek novels. And I have been also catching up with my graphic novels, and I'm reading 3 series right now and about to start a 4th. I'm reading Kill Shakespeare, Fatale, The Unwritten, and I'm about to finally start Fables. So maybe that's a cheap way of catching up to my Goodreads numbers, but I believe that graphic novels count as books to my Goodreads goal, so that's going to happen.
It counts. It totes counts. Transition. I think this is an important episode to have because it shows that we have outside interests from sci-fi fantasy. This is the anomaly part of Anomaly, I think. Like, I'm really into Project Runway and talk about it as much on the podcast anyway as possible.
Right.
Jen loves Downton Abbey, and I think she's also watching Called the Midwife now. And Angela, used to love How I Met Your Mother, and even though, just like me, she's pissed off at it now. And you love America's Next Top Model and baseball.
It's true.
So I think it's good to have this kind of episode every now and then.
And also Dance Moms.
Still have not watched Dance Moms. Still have not watched Dance Moms. I need to sit down and watch Dance Moms.
You really don't, though.
But then I can understand what you say. Anyway, okay, so how old is this movie? It's about 20 years old, right?
It's a little over 20 years old. It was released in July 1992.
Okay, so the spoiler warning probably isn't necessary, right?
Well, people can be grumpy, but it shouldn't be necessary.
No, honestly, I stick with the idea that if you haven't seen a movie that is more than 10 years old, that's on you, buddy.
I was talking about it at work today, and one of the people I work with was like, I've never seen that movie. I'm like, what are you talking about? Gina Davis, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, and Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
In a movie about World War II baseball?
Yep.
How have you never seen this movie?
It's a really good movie, and what's weird is that I look at ratings on IMDb, and it's like 3.5 stars or like 7 out of 10. And I think that maybe because of the stigma that a lot of, you know, female-dominated movies had back then, especially, because they were considered chick flicks. And I think still even now, it's still fighting that idea that it's a chick flick, but it's not. I think it's a really good movie.
I mean, there are couples in this movie, but there's certainly no romantic subplot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, actually, now that I say chick flick, it reminds me of a Kristen Stewart interview where someone said, you know, this isn't a chick flick. It's got action and adventure. And she said, that's totally a chick flick.
Yeah, that's true.
And I thought, wow, I really like Kristen Stewart when she's not in the Twilight movies.
Well, I think this movie, what I remember of it when it was originally out is that I feel like it was pretty universally praised. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I feel like everybody was talking about it for a while.
Yeah.
I had a part two of that, and it left my brain.
I wasn't exposed to this movie until, you know, it came out on television. It was on TV all the time later on. And at the time, I was really, you know, I'm still really into comedy, and Rosie O'Donnell was in it, and I remembered her as the funny lady with the talk show who had all the Broadway people on there. And then I noticed that there was Madonna, and there was Tom Hanks, and there was the guy from Soap Dish, which is a hilarious, cheesy comedy with Robert Downey Jr. and stuff. And I have this curse with movies that I always come in right at the middle. Or actually not even right at the middle. I come in like during the last 15 to 20 minutes. I've always seen the end of A League of Their Own. I've always seen the end of The Three Amigos. I've always seen the end of so many of these movies. Like nostalgic movies. And I don't think it was until I was much older that I actually watched A League of Their Own all the way through. And I think it struck a chord with me because it was mostly about the sisters, Dottie and Kit. Mm-hmm. Because I'm the middle child of two female siblings. And it kind of reflected the relationship that I not only had with my older sister, but also the relationship I had with my younger sister as well. You can go.
I I definitely saw this movie in the theater. I have very strong recollections of even my reaction to certain scenes. And even now when I try and think of it, I'm like, every character is my favorite character. I love everything about this movie. And I feel it's a comedy. I think that's how it's classified by most people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an important movie, which sounds ridiculous. But the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League was real and mostly forgotten to the general public until this movie came out. And there are so many just little things that stick out, these little scenes that, I don't know, they're just heartwarming. They're wonderful. And I love this movie.
Mm-hmm. As you should. And it's a Penny Marshall movie, too. And, you know, we all remember Penny Marshall from Laverne and Shirley, which is something I used to watch every day on Nick and Knight. And even daytime syndicated television as well. I didn't realize that she had directed movies that I had loved, like Big, The Preacher's Wife, I really enjoyed. I mean, it's the only Denzel Washington movie that I really enjoy, honestly. And A League of Their Own. So, and also I had seen Awakenings later in life, but those were the three movies that I had been exposed to like earlier in my life. So, I mean, and I really dig her. I think she's hilarious. And, you know, Gary Marshall is her brother, and he's also done some fantastic movies as well, like more on the chick flick persuasion. And I love how they kind of work with each other too. I feel like that may have been also a strong basis for the sibling connection between Dottie and Kit.
So that is based a little bit on fact. I am going to read something so I don't mess it up, like I have the last two times I've tried to say this, that comes from the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League website, which is aagpbl.org. So it says, the idea for the movie came from A League of Their Own, the documentary, which was written by Kelly Candale, Candale, and converted to a film with the help of Kim Wilson. Kelly was acknowledged by Columbia Pictures for writing the story in the credits of A League of Their Own. He was the son of a former player, Helen Callahan, and Kim, who he was dating, worked for ABC Movies of the Week in Los Angeles. Kelly stated that the story was written in honor of his mother, Helen, and his aunt, Marge Callahan, also a player in the league. The sisters were Canadians, but in real life they were not a pitcher and catcher. But Kelly thought that the story would be more interesting to use those two positions.
Interesting. Huh.
You know, because the pitcher and the catcher interact quite a bit in baseball.
Right. Is that what happens?
when you're just a casual observer, you don't necessarily realize how important it is that those two players get along. The catcher is basically calling the entire game, determining what pitches to throw, and they work together to figure out how to best get a batter out. There's a lot of cooperation that has to go into that. It's not just like playing catch.
Okay. I feel like I learned something today. Technically, I did. I don't pay attention to baseball.
Baseball's the greatest.
It's so American. It's the most American of the sports balls.
It is.
So obviously I am not a sports fan. Do you think there's a difference between, this is going off topic of the movie a little bit, but do you think there's a difference between a baseball nerd and a sci-fi nerd or any of those other nerds, or is it pretty much like so many similarities?
I think it's all nerdery.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who go crazy about their fantasy teams are just playing D&D, basically. You know, it's all numbers and stats and chance. Instead of rolling a dice, they're waiting for real people to possibly hit a home run.
So what you're saying? So what you're saying is that actual people are their D&D figurines,
right? Yes, that's how it works. But no, the only difference is that even still, painting your face for a sports game to attend a sporting event is still more widely accepted than painting your face to attend a science fiction convention. But they're the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. So, honestly, I've never been interested in sports ever. I mean, I was the theater kid who was so anti-sports because all the funding went to the football people and we needed money for glitter. But, you know, I can appreciate people's passion for it. Kevin came home one day and he was on his phone. He had missed the Dallas Cowboys game, which is a big deal down here in Texas because it's the one hope that we have left here. And, I mean, in terms of sports, because they were a big deal 20 years ago and people have been waiting for their comeback. And to make it simpler for me, he had come in through the door. He was looking at his phone, looking at the scores for the Cowboys game. He saw me and said, "The Cowboys aren't going to be the king of football this year."
Nope. They are not.
I just think the team loyalty thing is, I think that's the thing that boggles my mind. Even though I do it with actors and actresses, I'm kind of cheering for them to get a certain role in a movie or a theater show.
Well, I'll just say, for our listeners out there who do follow baseball even a little bit, I'll put it this way. I grew up in the greater New York area, and right around the time that the team you're assuming I'm talking about started getting great again was the time that I started caring about sports. It was just the right age. So, you know, 1995, when I'll say it and probably get booed and maybe we'll lose some listeners, when the Yankees finally went to the playoffs again, and Don Mattingly was still around, and there was Paul O'Neill, and Jeter came up from the minor leagues, I was, let's see, fall of 95. I was 12 years old. And I feel like that is around the time that people start caring about sports and feeling loyalty for them. So, and yes, I recognize my privilege in the sense that then that team went on to have quite the dynasty for several years, and a lot of people hate them, and I'm aware of that, and that's okay. But it hit just at the right time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I did not, but people cut school to go to World Series parades, and it was completely acceptable. Teachers cut school to go to World Series parades. Baseball, like football is in Texas, baseball is around New York.
Okay. So if I lived in New York, I would probably hate baseball.
Probably, yes.
Okay. Now, officially going back to the movie, I have to ask this because obviously Tom Hanks's character, Jimmy Dugan, is based on either one real person or an amalgam of real people. As the baseball person, can you enlighten me about who Jimmy Dugan is supposed to, who he's supposed to reflect? Because I think he's a fascinating character. And also I just love Tom Williams.
We're doing great at this.
I have an excuse because I'm drinking wine.
Ah.
I don't know what your excuse is.
Is that I can't read, apparently. Alright.
That's a good reason. But, you know, I just love Tom Hanks's performance, and the character just seems real to me, even though I know that he is pretty much a fictional amalgam of people.
Yeah, According to IMDb, he is based on real-life baseball players Jimmy Fox and Hack Wilson. They are, you know, both old-timey. I'm talking, like, the beginnings of baseball. Like, Jimmy Fox is, let's see, played 20 seasons for Major League Baseball and was born in 1907. So he did this, like, in the 20s and 30s. I feel so bad. Hack Wilson, same thing. You know, 12 seasons with the New York Giants, Chicago Cubs, Brooklyn Dodgers, around the same time period. So it's, you know, they're basing him... I'm not sure when they say that he's based on if they mean personality or statistics or what, but, you know, that's... any really well-known ball player, you could kind of see a little bit in. You know, some of them have just been known for being drunks or chewing tobacco or not caring. There were, you know, a lot of ball players who came up really from not a lot and didn't know how to handle suddenly having money and drank a lot of it away and got into a lot of trouble or injured themselves and fell into kind of a depression, I guess.
Sorry about that.
That's fine. But it is a story when you start to look into a lot of the old players, even some of them through like the 60s and 70s, sometimes the 80s, sometimes now, you see that kind of pattern.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I realized how good of a job Tom Hanks did until last night when I watched the movie. And it wasn't until then that I realized that he was walking with a limp, because in the movie he said that he damaged his knee.
Yep.
And when I was younger watching the movie, that didn't resonate for me at all. And even when I watched it through the first time, it didn't hit me, but that detail finally kind of struck me, and I'm like, oh, he's actually walking with a limp, and he's very gruff, and also the makeup department was great because they just covered him in sweat, not just because it was hot.
Yeah. Well, and the movie, of course, is set in like 1943-44, so when a ball player gets hurt, there is not the kind of reconstructive surgery we have these days. You know, they're not going to be out for the rest of the season or a couple of months and then come back and play the game. You hurt yourself like that, your career is over.
Yeah, I think they even did something like that in Mad Men, and that was a corporate office. That was like an advertising office. Basically, someone got injured and you hear someone else say, well, that's the end of his career. I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He can't sit at a desk.
More based on the announcer we hear all the time, who keeps saying, oh, doctor, throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. That is, of course, the Brooklyn Dodgers announcer, Red Barber. It isn't him, but it is based on him.
Okay.
He's the one who popularized that phrase of, oh, doctor.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember other parts of the movie that I really appreciate.
You know what I love? The scene that I really, really love. And maybe it's because I sort of like understood her pain, was when the scout goes to see Marla.
Yeah, that's my favorite part too. I was just thinking about that.
I have always loved that, and then have always sort of connected to Marla because of that, where she's just great at this, and you know what, she takes off her hat, the scout looks at her and just is ready to leave.
Can't use her.
She's great. Why not? What's the problem?
You know General Omar Bradley?
Yeah.
Well, there's too strong a resemblance.
All right, honey. You mean you ain't taking her because she ain't pretty?
Well, look who just caught up.
And the two of them, Kit and Dottie, just immediately set their suitcases down and refuse to go anywhere. It's such a great scene. But it is... the father's speech is wonderful, you know. And, of course, it's very, you know, standard gender roles. It's supposed to be the 1940s. But he's saying, her mom's not around. I raised her myself.
I know my girl ain't so pretty as these girls. But that's my fault. I raised her like a little boy. I didn't know any better. She loves to play. Don't make my little girl suffer because I messed up raising her. Please.
Yeah. One of the scenes I love and resonates with me is when Rosie O'Donnell character Doris takes out the photo of her boyfriend and they're just like, is this your boyfriend?
Is this out of focus?
Doris, is this your boyfriend?
Yep.
Is it out of focus?
No, that's how he looks.
Well, you know, looks aren't the most important thing.
That's right. The important thing is he's stupid, he's out of work, and he treats me bad.
Then why?
Why? What do you think? Because, you know, none of the other boys ever, always made me feel like I was wrong, you know? Like I was some sort of a weird girl or a strange girl. Or, well, not even a girl, just because I could play. I believed them too, but not anymore, you know? I mean, look it. There's a lot of us. I think we're all alright.
Oh, yeah.
Give me that.
It's just that's such a good scene. Like it's a comedy, but it has these moments that are just ugh.
Yeah, and that's the way comedies are supposed to be, honestly, because it's supposed to hit on truth. It just is. I mean, look at Louis, the show by Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
He just won an Emmy Award for his writing. For the episode, and so did the fat lady.
Mm.
And he wrote that great monologue. I can't remember her name. I think it's Sarah Baker is the actress, but she got to...
I'm not sure, but I've seen the scene you're talking about. And it's lovely.
Yeah. And she's just like, when a guy is fat, it's fine. But when it's me, all of a sudden... I'm awful. I'm not trying hard enough. And it's, you know, and Louis is like a subversive comedy. I mean, there is some blue humor in there, like blue. But then it hits on these poignant moments like Louis and the girl in that episode or Louis's interaction with his kids. There's a great episode in season 3 called Duckling and where he goes to perform comedy in Iraq and his daughter sneak a duckling into his luggage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think that's why I love A League of Their Own so much because it could have been just this fluffy comedy, but it has these real moments to it as well.
Well, speaking of real moment as well, another one that I love is when they're practicing on the field and the group of black women, the out group of African American women standing outside the gates and the ball rolls over and, you know, they ask for it back and then the woman just tosses it past Dottie to the woman she was playing catch with. And just to show off that she has the skills. And Ellen Sue takes her hand out of her glove and shakes it because it still hit hard. Like, it's basically showing she has this power. But, of course, because it's 1943, they're not allowed to play. Just like how Major League Baseball was all white at the time. So it wasn't necessary for the plot of the movie. It wasn't necessary for the storytelling. It wasn't even necessary for main character development, but it's just in there and it gives you more. It makes the whole experience of the story that they're telling so much deeper.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so important to the movie. And it doesn't have any dialogue at all. It's the shortest scene ever. And it's so just powerful. So poignant. Yeah, it really is. Huh. And also, Jimmy's relationship, how that grows with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a romance. I mean, it could be. You can tell where, like, maybe in the original script, they tried to write in a romance between Jimmy, and maybe an undercredited thing between Jimmy and Dottie.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's about how he grows to be affectionate towards these women and respect them. I really, really dig that. And of course, the most famous line of all time, which I quoted in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy.
Oh, you zip it, Doris! Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig shit. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No, no.
No! No! And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball! No crying!
I will tell you this. I have been to a lot of baseball games. I have been a season ticket holder. I have seen a lot of crying in baseball. I've seen a lot of crying in baseball.
Oh, and how convenient. One of the trivia notes I have is the movie's line, "There's no crying in baseball," was voted as the number 54 movie quote by the AFI.
Yes.
The American Film Institute. Which, I have to admit, I was kind of upset with that list because they did not include "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya."
Really?
They did not?
Maybe that's more of a cult following.
I refuse to believe that. Because you can... That and the crowd at the AFI are a little bit older. I mean,
true.
We were raised on that movie, pretty much. Whereas these guys, I mean, a lot of them were from, like, 1950s and 1950s to 1970s movies. So, just saying. Not so much with the 80s and after, which is why this quote stands out. Good yeah. for you. Good for you, A League of Their Own.
You know what else I love about this movie?
What?
Is that they're teaching Shirley to read.
I'd like that.
First, that scene where Helen figures it out, where she's staring at the board and she goes over and helps her find her. And then how May is trying to teach her to read, but she gave her a trashy romance novel.
I love that.
It's so great.
Come on. Off and grabbed her. Milky White.
May, what are you giving her to read?
Oh, what difference does it make? She's reading, okay? That's the important thing. Now go away. Go. Shoot. Go ahead, Shirley. You're doing good.
Thanks, Granny. Okay. Milky White. Breast.
It gets really good after that.
You know, but we never actually talked about the plot of this movie.
Go ahead.
I haven't found it.
Well, you need to try harder. So should I put this at the beginning?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm realizing we're talking about the scenes and with no context.
The list... If people have been listening to this podcast, they know what they're getting into.
Here is the summary from Fandango from 1992. The All-American Girls Professional Baseball League was founded in 1943 when most of the men of baseball playing age were far away in Europe and Asia fighting World War II. The league flourished until after World War II when, with the men's return, the league was consigned to oblivion. Director Penny Marshall and screenwriters Lowell Ganz and Babalu Mandel. Mandel or Mandel?
I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know. I don't know how to help you.
Babalu Mandel. We're just going to keep it that way.
Okay.
Recreate the wartime era when... Recreate the wartime era when women's baseball looked to stand a good chance of sweeping the country. The story begins as a candy bar tycoon enlists... This is written really strangely. The story begins as a candy bar tycoon enlists agents to scour the country to find women who could play ball. In the backwoods of Oregon, two sisters, Dottie and Kit, are discovered. Dottie can hit and catch, while Kit can throw a mean fastball. The girls come to Chicago to try out for the team, with other prospects that include their soon-to-be teammates, May Mortebito, Doris Murphy, and Marla Hooch. The team's owner, Walter Harvey, needs someone to coach his team, and he picks one-time home run champion Jimmy Dugan, who is now a broken-down alcoholic. After a few weeks of training, as Dugan sobers up, the team begins to show some promise. By the end of the season, the team has improved to the point where they are competing in the World Series.
Yay!
That leaves out so much of the interpersonal relationships, but that's a basic story.
Fandango can't have great synopses all the time.
The official website of the league does have an FAQ where they talk about how close the movie goes to the actual All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. A lot of them are long answers, so I'm not just going to read them on the website. But I highly recommend, if you're interested in I highly recommend, if you're interested in finding out more about the league, going to that website, which is, again, aagpbl.org, and just reading up on it. It is some truly fascinating stuff, and several of the women who were ballplayers in the league have also written books about their experiences. So there's a lot of content out there. But a lot of it wouldn't have happened if not for this movie, so.
I may need to go read those books. That is it. I don't know. We'll see. Because I don't really care about baseball, but I care about the history behind women in baseball. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, what I really dig about this movie is that apparently the stars actually took the time to entertain the extras. So if they weren't rolling, apparently they would sing songs from Jesus Christ Superstar, or Tom Hanks would do puppet shows. And of course, Rosie O'Donnell did stand-up comedy, mm-hmm, because that was her big thing back then. So I just think it's really cool that the actors, even when they aren't on camera, they were like, We need to do things, and we need to perform. We have people who will cheer us on. Tom Hanks had already won an Oscar by then.
What I love is that all of the actresses, or all of the actors, had to prove that they could actually play baseball.
And all of their injuries are real.
Yeah. That giant, like, strawberry bruise on Alice's leg, that's, mm-hmm, real.
Yeah.
It's the one that everybody thinks of when they think about the injuries in this movie. That's real, and that actress had that bruise for over a year.
Yeah. It didn't last this long, but I did have a bruise that looked a lot like that on the same area.
Oh.
It sucked to sit down. It was bad. And it also sounds like they had a pretty hard time casting Dottie and Kit for a while.
Well, Dottie definitely. I mean, yeah. Vina Davis was, I think, the third person who was signed on to do it.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy, because the cast is pretty much perfect. And you look at the names that are suggested, like Brooke Shields and Demi Moore and the other lady, Deborah Winger, and they're all fine actresses, but it just makes sense that it's Gina Davis.
Right.
Who, by the way, I love. I love Gina Davis. In fact, she's in a documentary that I watched right before I moved, actually, called Misrepresentation, which you can watch on Netflix.
That's a great documentary.
About women in the media. Highly recommend it.
She has a foundation, too, for women in the media.
Yeah.
And she is actually a genius, which is so great when Doris says to her, "What are you, a genius?" Yeah, she is. She has 140 IQ. Seriously.
She's so smart and she's so intimidatingly beautiful. I'm not going to lie. I cried when Gina Davis cried if you've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, spoilers, but if you've seen the movie, you know that.
If you haven't, why are you still listening?
I don't know. For our voices, surely. But in the scene where Betty Spaghetti's husband, she gets the telegram that he died in combat. It cuts to Gina Davis crying in her room, and like, you know that it, you know, she's worried about her husband, and like, in my way, the way I read it while I was watching it yesterday was that it's also guilt over being relieved that it wasn't her husband. And then he walks through the door, and as a happily married woman, I'm like, oh, I would die. I would die if this were me, which is, you know, why, you know, I have my own opinions about war and how my husband should never be in the military because I would die. But yeah, I can't imagine the pain that comes from, you know, your husband being overseas. So I respect anyone who does that. I just, mm-hmm. you know, it breaks my heart seeing it in movies. I can't imagine the actual anxiety and pain that comes with actually having a husband in combat.
Yeah.
Especially in a war as rough as World War II. And Bill Pullman is so sweet. I like what Gina Davis says, where, you know, she loves him and she says he works at the dairy. He's going to be manager one day. He's really smart. And because back in that day, there were no, you're not going to climb up the corporate ladder. You're going to be manager.
Yeah.
And we're going to raise kids and it's going to be great. And there's just a simplicity to that. That, again, I respect, but I also don't know if I would want to live back in the 1940s. The costumes were gorgeous. And so was the hair and the makeup. But at the same time, I kind of like my rights.
Which is another great bit from this movie. There's the bit at the very beginning. They play it over the tryouts for the women at Harvey Field, which is really Wrigley Field, if you didn't recognize the ivy on the wall.
I didn't.
Well, shh. It's Wrigley Field in Chicago. It really was Chicago, though. But there's the social commentary on the radio of this woman talking about how basically it's the decline and fall of Western civilization because women are playing sports. With enormously dangerous consequences. Think of the children.
When our boys come home from war, what kind of girls will they be coming home to? And now the most disgusting example of this sexual confusion, Mr. Walter Harvey of Harvey Bars is presenting us with women's baseball. Right here in Chicago, young girls plucked from their families are gathered at Harvey Field to see which one of them can be the most masculine. Mr. Harvey, like your candy bars, you're completely nuts.
Woo! I don't know if this is intentional or not, but again, it's I'm kind of overlaying my own baseball history knowledge, or at least Yankee baseball history knowledge, onto the movie, is that Dottie wears number 8, which is retired twice on my team for two wonderful catchers, Yogi Berra and Bill Dickey. So I don't know if that's intentional because she is also a catcher or if their numbers were randomly assigned. I went looking for that information of how they decided who was what number, but I could not find it. So if anyone knows, I'd be very interested. But for now, I will just believe that that's the reason why Dottie wears number 8.
That's a beautiful lie that you can tell yourself.
Thanks.
But the thing is that if you never find out, you don't know if it's a lie or not.
True. It's a theory.
Aren't theories also just beautiful lies?
No. Theories are potentially true.
Or beautiful lies.
Potentially true. So a bunch of the in the present day scenes or 1992 scenes, all of the scenes of the women playing a game of baseball at Cooperstown, those were real players.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading that.
Yeah. And the woman who in the sitting up in the stands says that, you know, Dottie, she was the best player in the league, but she only played for 1 year. That woman, she was a pitcher for the Rockford Peaches for 3 years.
And it says that her name is Dottie Collins, doesn't it?
Is that Dottie Collins?
It says it's Dottie Collins.
No, that's Dolores Pickles Dries.
Oh, sorry. I read that wrong. Oh, there it is. Dolores Pickles Dries. I was wrong! I'm not good at reading. All these names start with D's. What do you want me to do? IMDb with their Deborah Wingers and the Dolores Pickles Dries and the Dottie Collins and the Dotties and the too many D's. And then of course Rosie O'Donnell's character is named Doris, and there's a guy named David for some reason in here. And even though I know it's not a character in this movie, there are just too many D names. There are too many D names.
That was an interesting alphabetical rant you went on. You know, gun to my head, Doris would probably be my favorite character.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'd like to believe that, like, if it were me, I would be Dottie, as, like, everybody wants to be Dottie, but I would probably be Doris. It's true.
I think the character I most like is probably Kit, because I did have that older sister that seemed to be so much better at me at all the things that people thought were important. And then, you know, you kind of go your own separate ways, and you find out I have a passion for this and that's what's more important, and you get better at that. And so you see what's but I love Doris.
She has actually some of the best lines.
I love the interaction between Doris and May in this movie. Like, one of my favorite scenes with them is when they're explaining what's going to happen now that they're on the team, and they said no booze, no sex. And you see May just, like, fling up her hands, just like, I'm done.
I love their introduction when Doris whips a fastball at Dottie.
What are you looking at?
Yeah, what are you looking at?
Nothing.
Yeah. Right?
Nothing.
All these girls gonna be in the league? You wish.
You do wish.
They're gonna have four teams, 16 girls to a team.
That's right.
64 girls.
Yeah, what are you, a genius?
You know, they got over 100 girls here, so some of yous are gonna have to go home.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Come on, Doris.
Those people are jerks.
What do you mean, some of us?
Do it.
Okay, some of them are going home.
Hey, how did you do that? Excuse me. Hey, hey, you caught that? Hello? Did you see
her? So famous.
Jeez, let's go practice. She caught us with a ball.
Man, I just really love their interaction. And also, that's the sweetest, because when she finally gives up on Charlie, the two twins that they met at the dance hall are now big fans of hers, especially, mm-hmm. and kind of have a crush on her. And she's just like, what is happening?
She's so amazed that she's an object of affection.
You know.
That she's the one they picked. And it's like sad and sweet at the same time. You know?
My headcanon is that she married one of them.
Well, Marla married the guy she mentioned and sang to.
Oh, Marla's wonderful. I love Marla. I also relate a lot to Marla because she's so shy and, like, I remember when I was a kid, I would hunch my shoulders up like that, kind of hiding.
Uh-huh. What about Stillwell?
Stillwell made me never want to have children.
You're gonna lose.
Like, also, that's another poignant part of the movie for me, because you see this awful child, this hellion, and everyone hates him, and even when Tom Hanks throws the mitt at him and he falls down, yes. Everyone watching the movie is just like, yeah! But then it cuts to the 1992 scenes, and you see Stillwell all grown up, and he's a mature, lovely man.
Hi, darling. You remember?
You're gonna lose.
Stillwell, angel. My goodness. Where's your mom?
Mom died a couple years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. She was a real nice lady. And a damn fine ball player.
Yeah. When I heard about this, I just felt like I owed it to her to be here. She always said it was the best time she ever had in her whole life.
So, talk about evolution of character. You don't even get to see his evolution, but mm-hmm. you can see how much you can change from that point of your life of being an a-hole kid to this really nice guy. And you also get to see the evolution of these women to older women. I mean, the girl who doesn't read Shirley becomes a doctor, which is the sweetest.
I thought Helen became the doctor.
It was the one who couldn't read.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's the thing I took away from it.
I don't think... Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Here, I'm on it, too.
It's not on the quotes page.
Boo.
Let me look at the synopsis. Will it tell me?
Yeah, it's Helen that became the doctor.
Yeah, which is not the girl who couldn't read.
Really? I thought that was.
No, the girl who couldn't read is Shirley Baker.
Damn it. They look too much alike.
So there's so much growth of character in this movie, in the flashback to the 40s, mm-hmm. and in the 1992 scenes, because when it starts out at the very beginning of the movie, Dottie, Gina Davis's character in 1992, does not want to go to this reunion. She keeps insisting that this was just a thing she did, that it wasn't important. And even in the flashbacks, in the scenes in the 40s, she's saying the same thing. She's like, this is just a thing. This isn't that important. And then both in the flashback and in the 90s, she admits to herself how meaningful it is to her, or it was to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you find out that possibly one of the reasons she didn't want to go was because her husband had just died that mm-hmm. previous winter in the flash forward. So that may have been a factor. Because that was also one of the reasons she left the League.
Because she wanted to have kids. They wanted to have kids.
Yeah, they wanted to start a family. And he was home from the war and, you know, all that. And also, we have to talk about the unsung hero of this movie, which is Ivor Lowenstein.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he has a supporting part in this film, and he can kind of go unnoticed, which is, you know, I love the actor David Strathairn. When Mr. Harvey says, we're going to shut it down, the men are coming home, we're winning the war, so women can go back to the kitchens. And Ira, you know, decides to try to take up the league himself.
Mm-hmm. This is what it's going to be like in the factories, too, I suppose, isn't it? Men are back, Rosie. Turn in your rivets. We told them it was their patriotic duty to get out of the kitchen and go to work. And now when the men come back, we'll send them back to the kitchen.
What should we do? Send the boys returning from war back to the kitchen? Come on. Do you know how dedicated these girls are? What they go through? They play with sprained ankles, broken fingers. They ride a bus sometimes all night to play a doubleheader the next morning. I'll make it up to them. What, with Harvey bars? Getting tired of listening to you, Ira. Mr. Harvey, I'd like your permission to take over the league. What? Ira, do you understand? All of the owners are getting out. There's no point to it anymore. Just let them finish the season and that's it.
I sold your product when there was no product. This is a product.
There is no room for girls' baseball in this country once the war is over. They're through.
I think you're wrong. And I'm going to prove it to you, Mr. Harvey.
And they give him a little bit. They point that out, you know, in the 90s when they're cutting the ribbon on the exhibit for women in baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, they let him cut the ribbon to open it up, which is really sweet. And that is a real exhibit at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, New York. It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has been expanded since it first opened in 1988, which that original opening was the inspiration, or one of the inspirations or impetuses to make this movie. And since then, the collection for the exhibit has been expanded, and it is now permanent at the museum.
Yay! Anything else about this movie?
That it's the best movie?
It's one of the best movies, I will give you that. I don't know if it's the best movie.
I feel like there should be more, but I don't have any more. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we did just find out that there was a League of Their Own TV series that was really short-lived.
In 93. I think they made 6 episodes and only aired 5 of them.
Yep.
But I want to see them. How do I find them?
Listeners, if you know how to find a League of Their Own, the TV series, please let us know at moregirlygeeks@gmail.com.
No, seriously, though. Tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me how
like
to
if it's
it.
On, if it's on DVD, please let us know.
I'm sure
or
it's
iTunes
not.
Or whatever. It's probably not, but it would be nice to know if that were a way that we could do it. I think it should be revived as a TV series, honestly. I think it would be good. We've had all the Friday Night Lights and the sports shows like that. Why can't we have this thing? Why not?
I mean,
Orange is the New Black is a new thing, so.
If I had known it was a thing in 93, I would have watched it.
I think what may have happened was that they made it about 2 characters from the original movie, mm-hmm. which is fine, and that's how they did it back then. But what they should have done was start with a whole new cast of characters, because when you have 2 characters from the original movie, you also expect Geena Davis or Tom right. Hanks to show up.
Right. Well, that same character was, like, Jimmy Dugan was supposed to continue, but it was a different actor.
Right. Which, you know, people feel cheated sometimes when an actor who's so good at playing that role, especially when that actor is Tom Hanks, is replaced by a different person.
Yeah. But no, there were 4 teams that started the league, and we really, in the movie, only see 2 of them. We see the Peaches and the Racing Bells.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have picked one of the other teams and done that.
Mm-hmm.
The other two were the South Bend Blue Sox and the Kenosha Comets, FYI.
Ooh. Yeah, I would watch a show about that. Let's make that happen. Sue, you want to start a TV show?
Absolutely. I wonder what colors the Kenosha Comets wore. Oh, maybe they were the blue uniforms.
Ooh. I liked those uniforms. I like blue.
One of my dream cosplays is a League of Their Own uniform.
Aww. Is this before or after Blue Barracudas?
This is after I lose half my body weight.
You could still be a Rockford Peach.
Oh, I'm guessing that the South Bend Blue Sox probably were the ones with the blue uniforms. Anyway.
Anyway. So we did not get any comments for this episode.
No, we didn't really promote it either, though.
No. I mean, we've both been pretty busy anyway.
But if you have seen this movie, I hope you love it. If you don't love it, you're wrong. If you... You act like that's scandalous. We say that all the time.
It's true. I'm just glad that you're finally on the bandwagon.
If you haven't seen this movie, you do not need to like sports to like this movie. You do not need to like sports to like any sports movie, in my opinion.
I hate sports, and I love A League of Their Own and sometimes Remember the Titans.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
It's a really good movie. I just can't watch it all the time because I like my feelings where they are. I like not crying sometimes.
If you would like to cry some more about baseball, you can watch Pride of the Yankees about Lou Gehrig.
Oh, no.
Or Field of Dreams
about
I
have made an effort not to watch that movie because I definitely do not want to cry.
I love sports movies.
I know you do. Also, The Sandlot.
Yeah.
I love The Sandlot. Sure, they have that joke where they went, "You play ball like a girl." But it's just, it's a hilarious movie.
You watch A League of Their Own, that's a compliment.
Yes. So, yeah. So, next month, we're going to do a...
Your weird time travel movie?
Yes, the weird time travel movie. Called Safety Not Guaranteed. It is in my Netflix queue. We're going to watch it. Listeners, if you would like to watch Safety Not Guaranteed, please do so within the next month or so.
I assume this is a recent movie.
Yes. Because Aubrey Plaza's... Aubrey Plaza started getting popular with whatever it is. Parks and Rec. Yeah. So... Let's check to see when this movie came out.
Sweet girl, I would really appreciate it if you would not be a crazy right now.
Yeah, it came out, it was released in 2012, so it's only 2 years old.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Like, a small part of me wants to do this as a Google Hangout, but probably not going to happen. Because it would probably be just like Angela and Jen's commentary for...
Yeah.
Star Wars. Ah, cool. Ah.
Hello.
Hi, Marky. You back on the couch? You're cute. So should we wrap this up for something?
Probably.
This podcast.
Are you purring loud enough to be on the microphone?
I can't hear it.
No, you're not. All right, get out of here. You've served your purpose.
Away with you, foul feline.
She's beautiful.
She is a very pretty kitty. I love her eyes.
Her crossed eyes.
Yes, just like both eyes kind of in.
Yep.
Okay, so next month, Safety Not Guaranteed. It will be our first time watching it. It stars Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec, Jake Johnson from New Girl, and some other people.
Hopefully some other people.
Otherwise, it's just a two-person movie.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
Sometimes you can do it, but... All right. That's the end of this episode. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue. Should we do that again?
Yes. All right. That's the end of this episode. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
All the cool
you're
kids
gonna lose. You're gonna lose.
Down to the next explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y-podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's M-A-R-I-A-N-C-A-L-L. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
We are the members of
yeah,
the
don't
All-American.
Do it, I'll cry again.
I've had that song stuck in my head for the past day, and I blame both of us.
Between the freaking game last night and watching this movie today, I have cried about baseball so much in the last, like, 24 hours that it is not okay.
No, it's not. What would a world be like without baseball, Sue?
Sad.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.